Hi, everyone. This is Sam Williamson and Gary Barkalow with you tonight for another campfire conversation or garden gathering, depending on which community you're listening from. And tonight, we want to discuss the idea with you of how do you find the desires of your heart? And we're not necessarily looking at repeating what's in the book, It's Your Call, in that chapter, or necessarily what we teach at the retreat, but maybe just glean from each other our experiences of what God does to, again, surface the desires of our heart so that we can navigate by those. Sam, you have some thoughts as we enter into this conversation?
Yeah, you know, in the retreats and in your book, we talk about discovering our calling, and there's a variety of tools we use to discover our calling, including, of course, hearing God and having other people share with us what they see in us. But a key, I mean, a critical key to understanding our calling is understanding the desires of our heart, you know, being in touch with the desires of our heart. Now, just in the last month or so, my wife and I have been talking with a woman who belongs to our church, who went to a calling retreat, and she's saying she had a very difficult, very, very difficult childhood. And she's saying, she says, I just don't know what I desire. I don't know what the desires of my heart are. And my wife and I have been thinking about this some, and I realize I think this is a common thing for people. I think that we love the idea that the good news is what we're supposed to do is what we most want to do. But then sometimes we get stuck with, but what is it that I really want to do? Right. And I was thinking it would just be helpful for us together as a community to come together and sort of share how we've discovered the desires of our heart. And I'm not talking about a desire for a title, like should I be a lawyer or should I be a doctor? You know, those are great ways maybe to express the desires of our heart. But the desire of the heart is, I just want to care for people. When I see, you know, a child suffering, I want to comfort them and I want to care for them, I want to provide for them. Or we say, when I'm in a situation where there's confusion, I like to bring clarity. And so those are the desires. How we express it is a different conversation altogether. Maybe we should do that next week, Gary. But right now,
yeah.
I just want to say, how do we discover what those core desires are? So that's what I think we need to discuss together as a community.
Yeah, and I so agree with you on this. I mean, my own experience is, and you know, we talk about obviously calling and discovering the desires of your heart and God developing you in that and then offering it to the world, this effect and so on. And we talk about it all the time and think about it, but I'm telling you, I can go from I know what they are to I don't know what they are to I know what they are, but I really question them.
Yeah, right.
And so
It felt strong a year ago, but what about now?
Yeah, or they just feel foolish now or whatever. So, I mean, I experienced that personally, let alone all the people as you that I talk to say, I just don't know anymore. I don't know if I, you know, have a strong desire in any direction anymore. So, yeah, it is such a common thing. So let me start with a story of mine fairly recently. In fact, I shared this on a campfire conversation in the last several months because it happened that recently, even though we were talking about something else at the time. I was sitting in a Starbucks doing some work. I just needed to get away from my desk and all the stuff on my desk that calls my attention to it, bills that have to be paid, some correspondence I have to do, and so on. So, and I needed to just get away and do some thinking and writing and journaling. So I went to a Starbucks, and as I was sitting there doing a little bit of reading, this is on my iPad, and then doing some journaling with it, there were two people meeting with a third person at the end of this table. And I wasn't really trying to listen in their conversation, but it was close enough that I could hear it. And what I discovered after a few minutes, these two people work for a ministry in Colorado Springs. In fact, it's an international ministry. It's just based here. It's headquarters. And they apparently were interviewing someone who had an interest in a position there. Now, I could tell it was a rather informal interview process. Probably what was happening was they weren't meeting at the headquarters because they wanted to make sure that this was really understood is a very informal process. We're not heavily considering you. We're just meeting you, and so on. And I understand that, that's a wise thing to do sometimes. But what I noticed after a while was they just talked at her. You know, and this was a young girl. I'm guessing early 20s, probably the first job. I could kind of tell from her voice and her mannerism, this is probably a dream job for her to work for this ministry. And they just talked at her and at her and at her, telling her, you know, what they do and why they do it and what they expect and how amazing the organization is and how people have to sacrifice to work here. And I found myself getting so mad. In fact, so mad to a point that I had to leave. I couldn't do what I was doing anymore because I had so much turmoil going on inside of me, because what I realized that I was so mad at is I just thought, you are completely overlooking this girl's heart. Ask her a question. Find out about her. What's in her heart? Why is she interested in this? What does God want her to do? So if you don't give her the job, at least you've helped her in her journey discovering this effect that God wants her to offer and how. But they were so self-consumed, they didn't care a lick about this girl. And I'm telling you, it made me mad. And at first, in fact, it was on the campfire conversation that my first assumption that this was probably just, you know, this may have been just a spiritual warfare, kind of a distraction to keep me away from what I was supposed to be doing. And someone chatted on there, perhaps this was God showing you what you are so passionate about, what you love, this effect that you love to have on people. And so by seeing that abused in somebody's heart, God was saying, see how important this is to you? This is what you're made to do. That's why that bothers you so much. So there's a fairly current story of where God was saying, Gary, I'm going to give you another illustration of this desire that I put in your heart.
So would you call that seeing the opposite or seeing the abuse? How would you label that as a way of us helping us be on the notice for that kind of thing?
Well, you know, I do believe that we can get some clarity on the deep core desire that God has put in our heart to guide our life by looking at, you know, not only what we love, as we're talking about now, but also what makes
us
angry, right?
Yeah.
The battle we have to fight, the situation, the thing that happens that we could weep over, the thing that happens where we go from that shouldn't happen or someone ought to do something about that to I have got to do something about that. I don't want that to happen anymore. To me, that was just an illustration of God saying, now see how you have to fight that battle? You can't walk away and go, oh, those jerks. They need to learn how to interview somebody. It was far deeper than that for me. I may have used those words, but it was far deeper than that for me. So, yeah.
And it sounds like they might have been being jerks, but...
well, at least self-consumed anyway. Yeah.
So here's something that you said, and, you know, you posted... And I thought it was helpful. So basically, what you say is, and I'm going to copy this for everybody, you say, God will reveal more and empower those desires as I try wisely, responsibly, courageously, patiently, and seriously to enact those desires. And what it said to me, and, you know, I would love for you to tell me if I read it right, which is sometimes we have a small sense of the desire, but as we actually begin to walk into it, the fullest sense of the desire grows, or a fuller sense of the desire grows.
I do think it's true. I you know, and you and I have talked about this. I do think that as we become aware of the desires in our heart and we start to, you know, decipher what are the core desires versus desires of the flesh that we talk about, you know, we kind of vet those desires, you know. I think as we start walking towards them, then God's going to show us a whole lot more. I mean, I know if I have a desire, I didn't do nothing more than just kind of ponder it and journal it, and that's all I do. And I, that's a very powerful thing. It's an absolutely necessary step, first step. But as we start to walk towards it, you know, we try to walk in wisdom and say, okay, now, how can I do this? What would be a helpful way in light of my life and all of the things that I have in my life and so on? How can I start walking towards this? And as we do, I think that desire becomes more clear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I.
So
I
one
really
way
do,
to discover our desire is at least to take an inkling of a desire and start doing it. And
right.
It'll become clear, as you say.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know what, let's jump right here right now. So here's a comment and that John Hard left. And just so for those in the Secret Garden, so you know that there were quite a few comments left in Basecamp on this discussion page that Sam put together. So I'm gonna read kind of a Reader's Digest version of what John said about this question, and it's so good. He kind of gave two points that I'd like to read, and then Sam, have you jump in and start responding to it. He said, tracing my surface desire down to the root has helped clarify my true calling greatly. As I ponder the way my heart comes alive, this is his example. As I ponder the way my heart comes alive at watching a jet, I begin to realize this matches my heart's desire to see men and women live freely from their heart, the way they were intended to soar. And I love that his point is just that, you know, you become aware of a desire, and then you need to start taking that, dig deep and find out, is there something beneath that? Is there something more true than my initial understanding of that desire? And I love his illustration. He just, you know, is fascinated by jets, and he says, well, I don't think I really want to be a pilot. But what does a jet do? What is that speaking to my heart? So your thoughts, Sam?
Well, I think that's actually a perfect illustration of almost everything, which is he takes something, you know, a desire to fly, you know, that he likes the freedom of flying, and he says, why? What is it about that that's so fascinating to me? Or why am I so curious about it? Or why does it stir my heart? And he takes it. And I think as we take that in prayer and as we're in reflection, you know, understanding, discovering the desires of our heart is a lifelong, I don't know, what do you call it, a lifelong quest. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's something that we continue to grow in. Now, and it's not sort of an unsatisfactory quest like we're miles from the end, but it's each new discovery is an aha and a eureka, and there's something joyous about it every step along the way. I mean, some of you know, for me, that when I was in the computer business, I just liked figuring things out in the computer business, either figuring out how the software worked or figuring out how a client needed the software to work. And I just liked it. I really did. And I think it was only later that I realized I really like to do that to people more, how to help them figure out what they want to do. And little things can trigger stuff. So, in fact, John Hard was with us at a retreat last November at that Bear Trap Lodge,
yeah. Yep.
I was going to say Bear Creek this time. I'm always getting it wrong. And you showed a video from Alan Watts that said, what if money was no object?
Yep.
And he said, you know, so many people spend their life doing what they don't like doing so that they can keep on doing what they don't like doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it so stirred me. It so stirred me because I see everybody doing that. We spend so much time and energy doing the very thing we don't like so that we have enough vacation time to get away from the thing that we really don't like.
Yeah.
And I sat down, I mean, I don't know if you remember this, Gary, but I sat down on that retreat and I wrote sort of a calling statement or a calling manifesto or something that just reflected who it says. I said, I'm going to spend my life in reflection, curiosity, questions on God, His truth, deep beliefs of the heart, how the heart works. And I said, I'm going to do this if there's no money, no audience, no fame, if I lose friends, or if I die because of it, because it so expressed something. But it was triggered partly by something that happened at work, and then partly by a video that all of a sudden, I don't know, kicked me in the butt. I don't know what it did, but it it pushed me over the edge to say, I'm not going to be that way anymore.
Yeah.
It stirred something.
Oh, I knew that was huge for you. That was
it
a
was.
Huge moment. That, yeah. See, it's just amazing. I mean, it's what we're all talking about, how God will stir and awaken and surface desires. And he'll do it, you know, again and again from different angles like he did. He's been doing that with you, and that was another, you know, weighty, transcendent moment for you in your understanding the effect you want to have.
So I was at a calling intensive, and you know that at a calling intensive we normally have a small group, and we used to have four men or four women in a group during these calling intensives, and then each person would get a certain amount of time to go through a set of exercises, telling their stories and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was once at one, I'm thinking it was a couple of years ago, where I only had three guys in my group. And so, you know, we had extra time. Well, one of the guys, during his story, kept repeating this phrase, and it was the phrase of, when I go into a small group, when I go to a party, he said, I always see the person who's hurting. You know, and he says, my wife doesn't see it. I see Joe over there or Linda over there, and I see them hurting, and I want to go talk to them and find out what's going on. Well, because we had extra time at the end of this, we all took, you know, the fourth person's time, because there was no fourth person, and we started asking ourselves, what do you see that you think other people don't see? So we said, what do you see at a party that other people don't see? Or what do you see in an organization? If you walk into an organization, what do you see that other people don't see? And I guess I want to ask you, Gary, you've been in lots of organizations, you've been lots of places. What do you find that you see? If you just walk in, what do you see that maybe Lee doesn't see? Or maybe I wouldn't see?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm just going to have to think out loud, because obviously you and I haven't posed this question to each other before the call, before
the
second. Yeah,
it was a trick question.
Yeah. You know what? I think what I tend to look for and listen for is like the conversation I talked about that I overheard in Starbucks.
Yeah.
I mean, I will just start listening to a person to see, are you here, you know, whatever here means, you know, because you're compelled to, because there's something that you love to offer and you know there's a need, or are you here because you simply get paid? Or you're getting something else, but it's not really about who you are. And I'm just kind of looking for that and sometimes unconsciously, but I'm looking for that in their countenance. I'm listening for that in their voice and what they talk about. You know, I'm watching the way they respond to other people. I just tend to walk away with a feeling of, you know, these people love working here. I mean, this is what they're made to do, or they still don't like this. I mean, they could be working at, they could be working at Applebee's right now, serving burgers and fries, and it wouldn't be much different than what they're doing at this moment. I think I just tend to pick that up just because I love it, and it's just something that works in me.
I think that, I mean, now that you say that, of course, I am not surprised. I mean, anyone who knows you is not surprised that you go there and you say, are these people compelled to be here? From something inside or from something outside? You know, are they forced to or are they longing to? It's no
mm-hmm.
surprise.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so with that, let me throw the second part of John's thing out, because that fits so well. The second point John Hard made was, he said, when you eliminate the motives of people-pleasing, measuring up to God's standards, or anything else, and identifying those things that you always do no matter what, that you must do in almost any given situation, then you are closing in on the true desires of your heart. Boy, that is such a great, you know, idea of how to figure your desires out. If you could just for a second and say, okay, right now, I don't want anything I do to have to do with making God happy with me or making people impressed. Just try to, you know, to peel all those things off our heart and see what still remains at that moment. That is
right.
That is such a powerful tool. I think it's something we have to do all the time. We're always, I think, to live at the level of motive, not only that we live purely, but also so that we understand more purely our own heart. And I think you were just touching on it right there with that example. you know.
Well, I think that's a great way that he phrased it. Just read that again, if you don't mind.
Yeah, not at all. He said, when you eliminate the motives of people-pleasing, measuring up to God's standards, or anything else, and identifying those things that you always do, no matter what, that you must do in any situation, then you are closing in on the truest desires of your heart.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah, and I really even like the phrase, then you're closing in on. You know, because as you said, it's a pursuit we're in for our entire life because of the depth of our heart and the depth of God's life in us. So we're always closing in more and more.
Well, and I like it because it's talking about also the purity of motives, the purity of the heart. You know,
yeah.
And we do have to strip away that. I mean, if we examine our hearts, we'll see times that we want to please people or we're doing things not out of a purity of a heart, but out of an attempt to look good, or whatever it is, you know, peer pressure. And so we do have to strip those away, and as you say, we're closing in on the true desires of our heart.
Yeah. Well, and with that, you know, let me also say, as I'm hearing you say that, one of the things I think we have to, all I can think of is to say it this way. One of the things, we have to be careful we're not overly cautious of our motives, meaning this. I can get so concerned that I'm not doing anything out of selfish ambition or to be liked or to be seen or to be promoted or to be included that I do absolutely nothing. And I think, you know, we have to live at the level of motive and bring that to God and be aware of it. But you know, I think sometimes we don't really know our motive until we actually start to walk in it and then go, okay, this really tastes bad. You know, now that I'm actually sampling this, there is something wrong with my heart right here. I can tell what's dominating me. Or, you know what, I don't really think it's about being, you know, about people being oppressed with me. I just love offering this to people. So I'm almost going against what I just said, but I have seen people so overly concerned.
No, I agree with this.
Yeah, about trying to assume what their motives are instead of saying, just why don't you walk in it and, you know, you get more clarity as to what your motives are, you know, if you stay connected with your heart and with God in it.
So I just asked on the chat line, I said, what about y'all? What do you think or what about you all? Did you hear me just say that?
I know,
about
you all.
I was saying that for John Hard's sake.
Oh, good.
What about you? You know, what do you think are ways to discover your heart's desire? And Jack Lennedy says, going back to what you were like as a child, what did you bring that your siblings or other children didn't? What did people smile at, connect with, pat you on the back for?
Mm-hmm.
And then take that conversation to God and ask him, what was that about, really?
Yeah.
And, you know, this goes back to your calling, you know, the triangulation, story, desire, journey, but I think to really find our heart's desire story, our story, going back and looking at our story, understanding our story, I think that's critical. I mean, looking back at our life and understanding, as Jack said, why did people pat you on the back? What compliments did you get? What were the things that you liked doing? And then take as Jack says, taking that to God and saying, why? What was that all about?
Right.
Because I think the little child and sometimes is uninhibited, not all of us, but a lot of us were uninhibited as children, so we were able to express those desires in some ways, even though they were only partly formed and, you know, they weren't really mature. There is something we can discover there because we were less self-filtering than we are now.
Right.
Just as you were saying, we're so self-filtering now that we often don't do anything.
Right.
A lot of children say stuff that you can't imagine adult was saying.
Yeah. Well, and the clarity that comes with looking back. I mean, Jack, that's such a great point. I mean, we can't talk about discovering our desires without talking about the importance of our story. You know?
Right.
I don't know why I didn't think about that before. That's just really true. That's just so true. Yep. That's so good. So, you know what? And actually, while we're there, since Jack brought up some of us, Let me read an excerpt of what he wrote.
I was going to do that too. Go ahead.
So this is just an excerpt about, you know, how do we discover the desires of our heart. And He said, a couple of things I've found helpful are observing the lives of other men I admire and resonate with. What am I drawn to in them? What effect do they have on me? And why am I drawn to that? Most likely it's because I desire to have the same effect. I just think that is huge, the factor of, right, I mean, we talk about the stories that draw us and why does it draw us and characters in the movie, but let's, you know, let's not neglect real people, real characters around our life, throughout our life, and why we're attracted to that.
Right, and the idea is we see something, and very often it's the very thing that we want ourselves. And it's one of the reasons, you know, you can say, what kind of biographies do we read? And why do we read those biographies instead of another biography?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's because there's something about that person that stirs something in us.
Right, right. You know what, and I think there's also, so playing that out for a second, I've also found this to be true, at least for me. If I see a person who I think has a similar passion, desire, calling, effect as mine, and yet when they do it really poorly, you know, probably because they are, it's not who they are. It's artificial. They're trying to be somebody they're not. I mean, yes, somebody could try to offer something, but maybe God really wants to hone that skill in them, and they're jumping out ahead of God. And so it's really awkward at this point. But a lot of times, and so anyway, I've seen people that are kind of doing what I love to do, and they have the effect that I want to have. And when they do it, it's so bad that it's funny because it's in those moments when I can kind of hear the whisper of Satan in my ear, and he says, see what you're like when you do this? It's awful, isn't it? It's better that, Gary, that you not ever offer at all, because as much as you're turned off by that, that's what people are like around you. And that's happened to me many times. And finally, one time I thought, wait a minute, that wouldn't be my natural thought. And I really can go back and say why I didn't think that went well, you know, because the guy was arrogant, or because obviously he wasn't speaking about the heart, he was speaking about duty, or you know, whatever it was, or whatever. And so sometimes I think we can see people and we're just so turned off by it, and I think we can't even ask that question, say, what is it about that, what is that person doing that so negatively affects me, and why? Because there's some people that just do really goofy, stupid things, and it doesn't bother me. I kind of laugh at it, and I can walk away, but sometimes those things are so valuable to our heart that it really bothers us. You know, he is contaminating something that we hold as very valuable, you know, in our estimation. So maybe another way to look at it.
So talk about that sort of a negative approach, and I don't mean that negatively. What about fear? You know, so you have someone who says, I don't know what my desires of my heart are. And if you say to them, if I could say to you, Gary, if you knew that your family was going to be safe and they're going to follow the Lord, you know, what do you fear? And you know that you're going to have enough money. I mean, I'm sort of talking about some basic necessities of life. But I think sometimes when we look at our fears, it is actually capturing sort of the reverse, the negative, if you will, of our desires. Not always, but I think fears can often reveal that.
Okay, so Sam, just for us to understand more of what you're saying, can you give an example of that, personal or of somebody else?
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm not a fearful person. My dad, God bless him, he taught us to do some very dangerous things, so we ended up not having a lot of fear in our life, and we did a lot of stupid things in our life. But I would say that a fear that I have sometimes is that I won't, I mean, it sounds kind of silly, but there's a fear that I have that I won't understand somebody, that I'll be sitting with them, you know, for an hour, and I just won't understand them, and I won't grasp what they're thinking or what they're feeling or what's going on in their life. And I sort of feel hopeless in that moment, not hopeless, helpless in that moment, and hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
For me, there's a fear that I'm not going to understand and connect with them. And but I think the counter is it's because I want to understand. I so
right.
deeply desire understanding somebody, and that I can fear I'm just not going to get this person. I'm not going to understand them. I'm not going to connect. And I think it's because the flip side of it is because there's something that's a deep desire inside me.
Right.
To know and understand someone and connect with them.
Yep. I think that's huge. I think the thing, you know, and that can go in the kind of the negative category I gave before about what's the battle you have to fight, what's the thing that makes you angry, what's the thing that you
yes,
weep
exactly.
over. I think what's the thing you're afraid of because, you know, we hold it with such high esteem because that's what God's put in our heart that I'm afraid that's not going to happen.
Right.
Or I'm afraid it is going to happen, you know, whichever way you look at that. Yeah, I think that's a good thing because, right, there's some conversations I can be in and think, yeah, it's just a conversation. But there's sometimes we can hit on a topic of, for instance, a person's calling or what's holding them back. And my fear is this is not going to be helpful. We're not going to help this person. We're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
And so that's a good category. I like that.
So
I like that.
I'm going to be self-referential for a minute. Sam, I'm referring to myself. I posted just today, based on something you had said, I think one of your responses was dealing with numbness. You know, you wake up and your arm is numb because you've been sleeping on it in a different way. And again, I'm sort of thinking of different men and women that I've spoken to who will say to me, they don't know what they desire. And I, you know, on one hand, I want to help them figure out what their heart's desires are, and that's part of what we're talking about tonight. But I think it is worthwhile sometimes talking about why perhaps in this moment we're not sensing our heart's desire. So, you know, I think one of the things that was helpful for me is to realize that sometimes we may have experienced a recent trauma and our heart's just in shock. And I think in those moments, I mean, in a little way, Gary knows this, that every time I'm getting sick, before I have any of the physical symptoms of a runny nose or a cough, the day before, I'm sort of depressed, and I sort of think, I don't have any desires. I don't know what I want to do. Everything sounds boring or stupid or dumb. But
mm-hmm.
I think it's because we can go through times in our life where there's a type of trauma that is keeping us from knowing what our deepest desires are. And I think it's helpful sometimes just to know that.
I think that was huge. When you wrote that, that I think it's the last thing you put on the discussion page, I just think realizing, you know, as you and I talked about, I think we can really over-spiritualize this. I mean, we can look
yeah, right.
at it and go, why do I don't know? I'm not in touch with my desires. I don't know if I have any. Well, I just think looking at the heart or soul, if you will, and say, well, you know, and ask some questions. I mean, if you and I have gone through some trauma, well, the heart is numb. I mean, that's
yeah.
just what trauma does. It's in shock, if you will. And that's just a factor of the life of the heart or the soul. You know, or like you said, I mean, it's amazing how we are body, soul, and spirit. When I'm sick, it affects my soul and spirit as well. It just does. And so we can go to, you know, to Satan, or there's something wrong with me, or it's just sin in my life, or God won't speak to me. And it may be none of those things. It probably isn't. So I think that's just a huge reality factor, and I would even say a spiritual reality factor that we have to take into consideration. And I think that's where we as friends can really help each other and say, you know, I can say, Sam, I think you're doing better than you think you are right now. I think you're doing really well, you know, and I know it feels like, you know, you're in a bad place, but that's just the way you're feeling right now. And I think we have to do that for each other. You know, I really do.
Well, and Jason Reed on Basecamp sort of goes along those lines where he says sometimes just being kind to ourselves,
mm-hmm.
letting ourselves love the things we love. And in this case, I think if we've gone through some kind of trauma, it might be as simple as being sick. But if we've gone through some kind of trauma, it's just okay to just say, you know what, I'm going to be kind to myself and say, it's okay that I'm not feeling passionate right now. It's okay.
Right.
It's just okay.
Yeah, I think that is one of those big ones, too, that people keep giving us, you know, and this is be kind to yourself. Be kind to your heart and let yourself love what you love instead of keeping a distance from it as if there's something wrong with that, as if that's a path away from God versus a path towards God in your calling. That's huge. Just be kind to yourself. And I like what Richard McAllister put up as well, and I've copied this over to the Secret Garden site as well so they can see it. You know, he said, I think a way to discover your heart is something that just flows from somebody's heart without thought or pretext.
Yeah, I like that. We need to listen.
Yeah, we need to listen and watch what we do repeatedly day in and day out. Now, I love this phrase. There lies the yellow brick road to our true desire and not to our wound. The yellow brick road. That is so great. Follow the yellow brick road. You know, just, you know, give your permission to love what you love and go there. You're legitimate. It's legitimate. Your relationship with God is legitimate. And then the idea of then look back and say, what do I do all the time? I mean, it's just me. And then you start going, gosh, that is the yellow brick road. There it is. That's great comments.
So if you had to sum up, you know, if you had to give a final takeaway or something from this whole discussion tonight about how do we just discover the desires of our heart, what would you say?
Well, yeah. Gosh, you know what? I would, now that we've had this conversation, I'd add some things that I maybe wouldn't have said if we'd started with that. I love the idea of be kind to your heart, first of all. Since God loves your heart, and again, our heart is us. It's the real us. It's not just what we can do and what we can get done and, you know, and how we look to the world. He loves us. If we will be kind to our heart and love our heart as he does, I think we would be far more aware of our heart's desires. I think that is huge. I think another is, the first thing I wrote up there was this idea of, what do we do with a numb heart? Because I do think that we come in and out of clarity about our desires. Like I said in the beginning, we all do this. I do this all the time. They're clear, they're unclear. They're present, they're absent. You know, they're motivating, they feel foolish. And therefore this verse where Paul says to Timothy, listen, you need to fan to flames, to flame the gift within you. I just read that a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, you know what? It does feel like my heart's desire is barely glowing at this point. And that literally means these embers are covered with ashes, and you have to blow the ashes off to allow the fuel of oxygen to get to the ember to reignite. And I just think it's true of all of our hearts, and I'm feel like I'm just reemerging out of, you know, the suffocation of the desires of my heart for a while. For different reasons, you know, busyness, fear, getting a cold, and so on. So I think being aware of how, one, I think we have to take the effort to do it. I mean, Paul's telling Timothy, hey, you need to do this. You need to remember this and do it. So, one, we do have an obligation to own seriously the calling, the effect, the brilliance, the glory of our life, and keep that fanned and in a flame, burning. We have to take the responsibility, and then we have to, I think, be heart aware enough to see how God's doing it, you know, through a conversation, through something he takes away to say, oh, see how much you miss it? I'm not taking away because I'm punishing you. I'm taking it away for a short period of time because I want you to understand how much you miss it because it's who you are. It's kind of like, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Right.
I think he does that with our glory, with our desires sometimes.
Absolutely.
So
Yeah,
I think, you know, just watch what God is doing, because even though I feel dull to my heart, God is not dull to my heart, and he's doing something. So, and then, of course, then I'm going to stop here. All the other things, Sam, that you and I talk about, you know, stories of desire and strength of desire and words of desire and all those things, but, yeah. What about you, Sam?
Well, I think that if we really want to know the desires of our heart, the first thing we need to do is just in some ways be aware of our heart, grow an awareness of our heart, that it's getting mad, that it's getting sad, that it's getting angry, you know, that it's curious about something. Now I think there's sort of a subconscious way that we're aware of it. I mean, I think that I could say, Gary, are you mad right now? And you'd say, oh, yeah, I guess you're right, I'm mad. But I think becoming sort of consciously aware of our heart, I hope that you're not mad right now, but becoming consciously aware of our heart, and then in some ways taking these to God and saying, why? Why right now am I mad? And it might be because of some fleshly thing, but it might be, as we were talking about some of the negatives, like you were angry when you're listening to this conversation in the, I think it was the cafe, where you heard people just mistreating this young job applicant. And there's something stirred in your heart, and I think you could, if you didn't know part of your calling, if you would say, God, now what is it about this? God would say, see, I'm showing you something about a desire of your heart. Or if you're joyful, or if you're curious about something, I think the more we can be aware of our hearts, and then prayerfully ask God, why? Why am I experiencing that? I think that in that way, it develops an intimacy with God, and I think God speaks to us through our heart and says, but this is partly because it's part of the desire of your heart. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's, so my takeaway is, be aware of our heart. Let's grow in an awareness, and let's grow in taking this to God, asking why.
Right. And you know what? I think, yes, and I think trying to live in the arena of the desires of our heart, you know, just to be, like you're saying, be aware of it. This is not self-centeredness. This is trying to understand, God, who am I? What have you made me to do? What are you speaking to me? Because, you know, God has made us in his image. He's given us what is needed for this place in the story, and that consequently makes us come alive because it's who we are. And so to just take note of these and then pursue it and say, God, what about this? You know, as John Hart said, is there something deeper than what I realize about this? What do you want me to do with this? Should I move towards this? You know, the quote I put up there in the beginning of your discussion, which still stays with me, Oswald Chambers' quote when he said, if the Spirit of God is stirred, and I love its past tense, has stirred you, make as many things inevitable as possible and let the consequences be what they will. You know, so God has stirred you in some ways, and sometimes the stirring, we have to go back, you know, weeks or months or years. That's okay. He stirred you. It's still there, and maybe it's in the present moment. I'm getting stirred right now kind of thing, you know. But he said, now go make it possible. Go walk in it and see what happens with God. That is a huge guiding principle in my life. I try to live by that, okay? That's what I want to do, then let me try it. I'm not going to be foolish. You know, I don't want to be self-centered in this. I know that my life affects other people and I have responsibilities and people I need to love well. But in the midst of all that, I'm going to try to make things, everything possible to walk in that direction. I just think that's a huge factor in understanding our desires.
Well, and that's really the first thing you said, is one of the ways to grow in your desires is to start to do them. Oswald Chambers makes it even worse. He says, make it inevitable.
You know,
don't even allow yourself to stop.
Yep.
That's really good.
So, hey, everyone, Sam and I have talked about this idea of next week, and what we would love to do, and this is a great segue from what we're just talking about, is, you know, this has all been about how do you discover more deeply, or maybe for the first time, the desires of your heart, and what are the different ways God does this. But that question that Sam posted begs a second question of, okay, once I start becoming aware of some of these desires that I think are core to me, I think they it does speak to what I'm to offer to other people, then how do you even start walking in that direction? How do you, as Oswald Chambers says, make everything inevitable so that, you know, you get to test that desire? And so we would love to talk about that next Thursday, and we'll put a post up so we can start a dialogue before we get on the phone. And again, you know, Sam and I want to share our hearts, our lives, our stories, our understandings, but that's limited to just two of us, you know.
Unless people post things.
Oh, we love it when you post things, your ideas, and what are you learning, and what have you seen, and what do you question? And so, you know, we'd love to. We want this to be a group thing. So, please jump on in. We'll post this in a day or two. So,
thanks everybody.
Yep, great conversation. We love you guys. Love doing this, and we'll be back with you next week.
Yep.
All right. See ya.
Bye, everybody.